Experience holiday cheer at Tanger Outlets with savings up to 70% off your favorite brands. From fragrances to accessories and the latest styles, discover the best gifts for everyone on your list. Save big at Nike Factory Store, Michael Kors, Under Armour, Coach, Polo Ralph Lauren, Kate Spade New York, and so many more. Unwrap the best at Tanger Outlets. Hundreds of brands, endless gifting options. Plan your trip at tanger.com.
Step into a world where ancient wisdom meets modern mysticism. Introducing the Gnostic Tarot, a powerful fusion of esoteric art and Gnostic themes designed for those who seek the ultimate gnosis. This mesmerizing deck, rich in symbolism, draws from the profound teachings of Gnosticism, serving as an ideal companion for meditation, reflection, and the exploration of spiritual realms. Whether you are a seasoned tarot enthusiast or new to the practice, the Gnostic Tarot caters to all, offering a portal to ancient wisdom and a tool for uncovering the hidden truths in your mystical journey. Unveil the mysteries, embrace the wisdom. The Gnostic Tarot is a timeless companion for your spiritual odyssey. Take a journey with Gnostic luminaries and learn their stories in a visually stunning manner. From Sophia to the Gnostic Christ, their journey is your self-discovery. Choose from the basic deck or the deluxe version, which includes a beautifully crafted journey book and a magnetic storage box, ensuring that your Gnostic Tarot remains a treasured companion on your spiritual quest. The Gnostic Tarot is an original and collaborative effort between Miguel Connor of Aeon Byte Gnostic Radio and Matthew Schmitz of Altrusian Grace Media. Visit our website to embark on your journey today. Syncrasis Publishing, where ancient wisdom and modern mysticism converge. Welcome to Aeon Byte and Happy Heresies. My name is Miguel Connor, and I am your Pompadus of Gnosis. So glad to see everybody. Welcome. Welcome to that dream of you, that ship smoke on the horizon, as the song Comfortably Numb says by Pink Floyd. And welcome to find out what reality is and who you truly are with the ancient wisdom of the Gnostics and other heretics. And yes, you just saw an intro from the Gnostic Tarot. It is discounted throughout the holiday, so check it out, because it's certainly a portal for to find your higher selves, and many people have bought it, have agreed on this. And today I am extremely excited to have back Paul Levy to discuss a book I really enjoyed, The Quantum Revelation: Awakening to the Dreamlike Nature of Reality. Paul, thank you very much for coming back on the show.
Yeah, I'm just so happy to be here with you. Thank you, Miguel.
And happy holidays, and I hope you had a good Thanksgiving, too.
Yeah, totally.
Good deal. And somebody else who I always enjoy talking to you here or on the phone or anywhere else, and that is Graham Pong. Graham, how are you doing?
I'm doing very well, Miguel. Looking forward to wading through some quantum foam here.
Indeed, the ripples of the quantum foam. And yes, and for the audience, if you have a question, as always, please super chat them so we can get to them. As I was telling Paul, my book coming out in April, The Occult Elvis, I cited him heavily in Undreaming with Tico and several places. In my Bowie book that I'm writing now, I'm also citing him because, yes, Bowie was very much into mind viruses and stuff like that because he was so influenced by William Burroughs. But with Paul, it was the idea of the wounded healer, and both Elvis and Bowie were wounded healers, severely abused as children, mystics, artists, very sensitive souls. And Paul's work really helped me. Unfortunately, one of these bright lights didn't make it. The other one actually fixed his life, sobered up, and became, you know, a great person. But yeah, Paul, thanks for all the work. And I look forward to when I can give you a book.
Yeah, no, I just can't wait to see your book on Elvis, particularly. Thank you. Yeah.
Oh, yes. Can't either. So awesome. Well, let's get started with your book. Tell us about this new book. And as you write yourself in the book, for the last few years, all I've wanted to do is read about quantum physics. What's up with that, Paul?
Yeah. No, totally. What is up with that? Well, it's based on an experience I began having in 1981, in which, you know, it was like I had a quantum leap and I found myself in a whole new universe that looked exactly like the old universe that I was living in my previous 24 years. But, you know, it couldn't be more different in that I was beginning to wake up to the dreamlike nature. And what I mean by that is that this world of ours, this universe of ours, I was beginning to first have realization of, oh my God, we're having a collectively shared dream, that we're dreaming this universe up into materialization each and every moment. And it was very disorienting. You know, I mean, I'm now close to 70 when you're a 24-year-old kid, and I just can't imagine how you could be prepared for that. But then I came across over the years quantum physics, and I began to really study it. And I'm no physicist at all, but I'm a very curious person. And I began to have the realization that quantum physics was describing the very thing that I had tapped into, the very realization. And I'm, you know, so I've written this book on quantum physics, where it's, I'm pointing out in as many ways as I can imagine that quantum physics is actually pointing out that we are having a dream, that's what the essence, like, you know, quantum physicists are, they're all in agreement that, oh, this is the greatest discovery ever in all of history. That there's no disagreement about in the realm of science. But where all the controversy is what does it mean? And I'm just an outsider, like I'm saying, I'm no physicist. And they're all saying when we haven't figured out the central idea, and when we do that, we'll go, you know, we'll think, how could we have been so blind for so long? And they're actually saying, these physicists, yeah, it's going to be so simple, the central idea, that we'll be able to express it on a bumper sticker or on a T-shirt, you know. And here I'm coming in and saying, yeah, the central idea, what quantum physics is pointing out and revealing to us simultaneously, is the dreamlike nature of reality. And that's a game changer. You know, that's the medicine for the insanity that ails our species.
I agree. And we need to get to this new paradigm. I think I always love the quote by Niels Bohr, and I'm paraphrasing, that if you're not disturbed by quantum physics, you're not paying attention. Kind of like the Gospel of Thomas, where Jesus tells Thomas, first you'll be disturbed, then you'll be amazed. And how Niels Bohr said, you're not thinking, you're merely being logical. So what he's saying is, we really need a paradigm, and the way we think needs to change. The old ways don't work.
Well, it's interesting. Universe. It's interesting you say that, because, you know, all the founding fathers of quantum physics were saying, you know, here it's changed the course of history with all the technology and lasers and computers and atomic energy and all that. And they're all saying that's just the low hanging fruit. Where the real benefit of quantum physics is, you know, having to do with giving us insight into the nature of our mind. It's going to change our thinking. And that's what I'm, you know, that's what my book is about. And, you know, just to say like a few more things to give people a sense, there's a current quantum physicist, Christopher Fuchs, who says quantum physics, it makes life worth living. That's how like amazing it is. And then there's another physicist way back when who was saying, yeah, you know, when I feel out of sorts and depressed, I'll put on classical music and listen to Mozart, or I'll study quantum physics. So it's a natural antidepressant, because it gets you in touch. In a sense, it's become a spiritual path. It's getting us in touch with who we are. And it's like showing us the incredible creative agency and power that's intrinsic to our nature. But to the extent that we're like unconscious of it, then, you know, that creative power and genius that's part of our nature turns against us in a way like we're seeing in the world today, in a sense that it's actually potentially killing us.
Oh, I'm sure. And I'm sure there's a few factors too about quantum physics. One, again, we still want to think in the mechanical Cartesian way. I think you call it the objective reality hangover. But we know we can no longer think that way if we want to even survive as a species. at the same time, it's so weird because, like you said, quantum physics has given us so many inventions, but at the same time, it's still so, I mean, change your thinking about probabilities and the observer changes reality. So that's a hard too. And I'm sure you, do you agree that sometimes New Age has done more damage than good? Like what that movie, What the Bleep Do We Know? And you know what I mean? They've taken it and just gotten it wrong. So we're kind of,
yeah,
we're
well, no, the thing is like movies like The Secret or What the Bleep Do We Know? I mean, they're really like tapped into something and pointing at something profound, but then, you know, if it's not a pure transmission, you know, it gets, oh, you can do this and you'll get like, you know, the Cadillac that you want or the color TV or whatever. And, you know, because quantum physics, so just for people who don't know, it came into the world and into our minds about 100 years ago. And it's such this radical discovery that we're in the very beginning stages of even beginning to wrap our minds about what it's revealing to us. And, you know, typically when you have a discovery this radical, it takes centuries to begin to integrate into, you know, the collective mind. And, you know, here is just a very simple way of understanding quantum physics. Before quantum physics came on the scene, physicists thought they were studying this universe and they were passive observers trying to understand the workings of the universe. And then quantum physics came along and empirically proved that no, that's a nonsensical idea. The idea that there is an objective world separate from you, that's observing the world, that only exists in your mind. That has no correlate to reality. On the contrary, the act of perception, of observation, actually influences the universe observed. Now, right there, that's the rabbit hole I spend the whole book going down, because that's an expression of the dreamlike nature. That if you change your observation, your perception, the dream you're in has no choice but to shapeshift and reflect back the change, because it is nothing other than a reflection of your own mind. And so when you really take that in, what that means is that the act of observation is not just passive, but it's an active act that is creative. And it's implicating us in the creative process, that we, via how we observe reality, how we interpret the waking inkblot of this world, whatever we will impute meaning onto our world, that actually has an effect on our experience of ourselves and of the world, which is to say we are creating our experience. There's no one else who's doing that. I mean, whatever's happening is happening in our world, but we are the ones who are creating our experience of ourselves and of the world. And that's major, because when you really take that in, it like unlocks this incredible creative agency that all of us have to create our experience. And interestingly, I point out, you know, because I've written 3 books on this mind virus, that's the diagnosis for what our species is suffering from. And I point out that what the revelations of quantum physics are offering us is the medicine, you know, for that mind virus.
Yes, indeed. And yeah, well said. I even love, well, the whole book is great. And for the audience, he takes us on a journey with all these figures, the fathers of quantum physics, mystics, scientists, psychologists. But in one part, you quote the great Bernardo Castro, philosopher and scientist, and he writes, "Materialism suffers the core of our being by being a kind of involuntary osmosis, like a virus. It spreads unnoticed until it's too late and the infection has already taken firm hold." So in other words, Witika wants us to think that this is just a dead universe and there's no consciousness.
One way to understand that, and yeah, I'm glad, because I love, you know, Bernardo's work, and you know, I think he's really switched on. And one very simple way of understanding it is like to invoke the imagination. So imagine we're in a dream, right? And imagine we're holding a particular point of view in a dream. Well, the dream, which is nothing other than a reflection of our own mind, just reflects back whatever viewpoint we're holding. Now we have evidence confirming the seeming objective truth of our viewpoint. So we get even more fixed in our viewpoint. And the more fixed in the viewpoint we get in the dream, the more the dream just confirms and proves to us the accuracy of our viewpoint ad infinitum. It's a self-reinforcing feedback loop whose source is to be found within our own mind. But what I'm describing, we've hypnotized ourselves by the creative genius of our own mind. Right. That's what Tico, the mind virus. And that's what quantum physics that's coming in and proving, no, you know, there is no objective world separate from awareness. That awareness is always one of the variables and the factors in the equation of the universe. You know, it's a game changer.
Very much. At the same time, you can hear the ancient Buddhists and the Hermeticists, the Tao, tapping you on the shoulder saying, hey, we've been telling you this for thousands of years. Yeah. Now you finally caught on, right?
Yeah. No, exactly. And quantum physics unwittingly is promoting itself to be a spiritual path. And if I could just say a word about that, because when you actually have the recognition that there's nothing objective out there. I'll just give you an example. You know, like in this new version, because this quantum book that's coming out, it's already been out for a number of years. People have been blown away by it, but it's such an, if I can say so myself, an important book that I got more downloads and now a new expanded version. And one of the major new parts of the book, there are a couple of parts that I want to talk about that are new. One is it's called contextuality, quantum contextuality, that everything is context. And so, for example, in a in a quantum jigsaw puzzle, you know, like in a classical jigsaw puzzle, it doesn't make a difference if you start from the center or from the edges, you always come with the same final image. But in a quantum, you know, jigsaw puzzle, if you start from the edges inwards to the center, you'll get a different final version than, you know, if you start from the center, go outwards. And like one example, you know, there was a painting, because I'm an artist and I was doing a painting years ago, and I had this gray color on the canvas. And then I put like blue next to it, and all of a sudden the gray wasn't gray anymore. It was purple. Mm. Now the question is, what was the objective color? Was it gray or was it purple? And there's no objective color. The color I'm experiencing is an interaction between the outside world and, you know, my own mind. In the same way that if it rains, I'm in Portland, it rains a lot, there are rainbows all over the place. The rainbow doesn't exist objectively. It's just an image in our mind. There's no objective rainbow. And that's what quantum physics and Buddhism are saying is the nature of our world. And so the idea being that where quantum physics is promoting itself to be a spiritual path, when you take in that this world doesn't exist separate from your own mind, that there's no objective world, well, then what happened to the subject? Because I, as a subject, I have to have an object to be in relationship to in order to be a right. subject. But if there's no object, what happened to the subject? So in other words, it's like shedding light on, wait a second, who am I in all of this? Because you begin to realize the subjective experience of being an ego and the experience of thinking that the world exists objectively reinforce each other. That's the illusion. It's an illusion generating an illusion. And that just goes on for endless time until it's seen through. And quantum physics is helping us see through it. And not only does it give us insight into the nature of this universe and our place in it, but it's giving us insight into who we are. Mm-hmm.
Very true. Very true. Yeah. And at the same time, going back to the foundations of quantum physics, and I want to go back to also stress the mysticism, is that it's almost like you need, and I'm going to say the word religion, to expand our mind, like the Hermeticists said, and all the mind model religions, because individuals, whether Einstein, Wolfgang Pauli, Oppenheimer, Niels Bohr, they were heavily influenced by Eastern traditions, by Western esoteric. It's almost, don't you think, Paul, they needed that to take the next step in our scientific world. And I feel we've lost it in the 21st century with so much secularism, I feel.
Yeah. No, well, that secularism, the scientific materialist viewpoint, in a way, then once we, because it's been such an unexamined assumption for centuries that we exist as a separate self. And that is, by the way, the mind virus is like identifying with who we're not, thinking we're an ego in space and time. And then as soon as we identify with that, we dream up a world that seems objective, that just reinforces that illusion. And that's what quantum physics is helping us to see through. And yeah, the quantum physicists, like you were saying, they were all like, you know, I point out in my book that this is what Buddha realized, you know, and there are many people who think that Padmasambhava, who the Buddha prophesized after he died, would, you know, when incarnate and would be even a greater, you know, incarnation than himself. And he founded Tibetan Buddhism. There are many people who think that Padmasambhava was the founder of quantum physics, you know, and and then I have a thing on alchemy, that the quantum physicists are the modern day alchemists, you know. And so, yeah, this is for people who watch your show, who are interested in Gnosticism, alchemy, any sort of wisdom tradition. Quantum physics is the modern day, you know, sort of version of a spiritual wisdom tradition through the hardest of the hardcore sciences.
Very true. And what I like about your book is I am terrible with math and stuff, but your book is approachable. You give us a good way to approach the math, the intellectual part, the scientific, the spiritual. So it's a good read that anybody can read it, right, Paul?
That's because I had this awakening, and, you know, and it was very problematic because I was so excited about what I was realizing way back in 1981 that I immediately got thrown in hospitals and diagnosed and told, oh, you're mentally ill. And you know, I mean, I knew, not for one second did I buy into that. But it was, you know, it was really sort of problematic. But, you know, I was having these overwhelming experiences that at least my conception of the universe were physically impossible. That could not happen in this universe. And yet they were happening on a regular basis. And I began to realize over years and years, oh my God, I'm having a revelation. That's what started in 1981. And the revelation was like the stuff that was happening that was impossible could only happen in dreams. Mm-hmm. And I was realizing more and more, oh my God, the dreamlike nature was showing itself to me. And it's been over 40 years of me integrating it and building up like a skillful way of articulating it. So not being a physicist, you know, I'm not into the math or the nuts and bolts of, you know, how to do physics. I'm more interested in what is quantum physics like expressing to us about the nature of this universe, you know, and the nature of ourselves. And one final thing, and then I would like to go into this maybe in a little bit, is that in Tibetan Buddhism, there's this amazing tradition, you know, because I've been doing Tibetan Buddhist practice, you know, for 40 plus years, of this particular tradition, and it's called the hidden treasure. The terma is the Tibetan word tradition. And I'm pointing out that modern physics is a modern day analog to a terma. And that's profound. And that's the other than the quantum contextuality, the terma part of quantum physics that's one of the new things in the current version.
Wonderful. Yeah. Please talk as much as you want. I was a Tibetan Buddhist in the late 90s. I was part of the Don Mountain in Houston Temple, but
Is that with Ann Klein?
Yes.
Oh, she's awesome.
Best meditation teacher ever. You sit with her.
The same university. I didn't realize we went to the same college. She's just like a superhero of mine. Ooh, I just amazing love her work teacher. So much. She's not only a practitioner and a lama, but a scholar. An incredible scholar.
She's a teacher at Rice University. Yeah.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. And so, okay. And so she knows all about the Terma tradition. So the Terma tradition, one way to envision it, you know, so say if the community of practitioners, if their practice gets a little one-sided or stale, or they fall asleep, all of a sudden in the community, there will be discovered one of these hidden treasures, which might be like a new practice to do or a prayer or a blessed object. And the idea is, so it was Padmasambhava, you know, who's the Buddha of our age, who founded and created the Terma tradition. And the idea is he would plant these spiritual treasures in the multidimensional fabric of the dream, you know, in the physical world, in our minds, in every dimension. And then right when they were needed, they would be discovered. by the person who was fated to discover them. And one way of understanding it, it's like alarm clocks that wake us up at a given moment in time, right, or like the like a charm that breaks a spell, or a key that opens a lock, right? And or one way of really understanding it very simply, just like if I as an individual fall asleep and get one sided and off balance, then I go to sleep and I have a dream, and the dream is a compensation. It'll symbolically offer me something that if I am open to what it's expressing in myself, then I will get back to, you know, being in connection with myself. So that's a very simple way of understanding terma. And typically they're created at a certain point in time, and then they might be discovered centuries later. Yeah, a Tibetan Book of the Dead is an example of a terma. If you look at it, authored by Padmasambhava, discovered by a different person years and years after Padmasambhava authored it. And so terma are, you know, and it's not just Tibetan Buddhism. They've just really articulated this tradition in a very profound way. But every spiritual tradition has this sense of, oh yeah, there are certain of these like magical objects or events or scenarios that help to wake us up. And like, you know, just think about it. Think about you're in a dream and you don't know the nature of your situation. So you don't know you're in a dream. You think it's real and objective and solid. And then all of a sudden something happens in the dream. Somebody says something, you come across an object, and it'll help you to recognize the nature of your circumstance. Oh, wow, I'm dreaming. And then you have a lucid dream. That's like the idea of terma. And so what I point out is that quantum physics is a modern day analog to a terma. That I don't want to appropriate the Tibetan tradition. No, I'm just saying that I'm trying to honor it. And I'm trying to say, yeah, when you have the realization of the affliction that our species has fallen into, i.e. that we've become entranced by our own minds in thinking this world exists objectively, and then that we exist as an object separate from the world and who's subject to the world, and that's the illusion, and that's the samsara, that's the whole suffering, then all of a sudden into our world, beginning of the 1900s, comes quantum physics and turns that all in our on its head, you know? And so from that point of view, it can definitely be envisioned as a modern day analog to a terma, but we need to have the recognition of what it's revealing to us, because it is revealing to us something really profound about our own nature, about the incredible, practically infinite creative potentiality and agency and power that all of us have. But to the extent that we're not aware of it consciously, that creative genius that's intrinsic to our nature gets turned against us in a way that can create real suffering. And when that gets dreamed up writ large on the world stage, then we're at a position like we see today. We're on the verge of destroying our species.
Yep. We'll talk about them soon, but as Jung said, everything casts a shadow. We can create beautiful things, but we're on the brink of annihilating each other. Did you watch the Oppenheimer movie that came out, was it last summer?
No, I haven't seen it yet. Yeah, I've been kind of busy, but I'm aware that it came out. Yeah.
Yeah, it was okay. I think he's, well, never mind. I don't want to critique Christopher Nolan, but still an interesting movie with the idea, you know, Oppenheimer, I have become death, destroyer of worlds.
Right. And, totally.
The famous quote. Well, let's bring in Graham. Graham, you're very much into quantum physics. Do you have a question or remark for Paul?
I was going to sit there and say, I was going to ask Paul to critique, because I'm coming from a, you know, slightly different dive after, you know, my swim through this area. I'm kind of more where Niels Bohr was coming from, which is that consciousness is primary, and it's what divides the objective and subjective. Those are secondary to consciousness. And if you take consciousness as the primary, you end up with what quantum physics is basically humanity probing the unknown. And this world is the meaning of quantum physics. And the whole point is balancing the opposing complements, like particle and wave and such. How close did I get to your position, Paul?
Yeah, no, that's right on. I mean, when I'm saying that, you know, quantum physics is like showing us the dreamlike nature well, what is the most fundamental thing in a dream? It's an expression, an unmediated expression of consciousness. You know, so like one way to understand this is like, so quantum physics is really trying to understand what are the building blocks of this physical universe? What is the microstructure? And as it went down and down in scale, at a certain point, it didn't find anything physical, but it found consciousness, you know? And that's what you're saying. It's so right on in that we've been entranced in thinking, in sort of creating a distinction between mind and matter, you know, between the observer, ourselves, and the world. There are a lot of ways of articulating the you know, sort of this bifurcation in consciousness. And you know, to see that consciousness, and this is, you know, there are a lot of the founding fathers of quantum physics who have these beautiful quotes basically articulating just what you said, Graham, around that consciousness or mind or whatever you call it, that's the most fundamental essence of everything. And that we can't, you know, the idea that we're thinking that matter is primary. Like, here's the word, you know, because I quote Jung a lot in the book. Yeah. And he says, yeah, but physical matter is only an inference. We only experience physical matter through our mind. The mind is the primary thing, you know. And interestingly, you know, I have a new book that I'm writing because according to Jung, the greatest discovery of the, so in science, the greatest discovery of all time, you know, there's no debate about this, was quantum physics, which was in the early parts of the 20th century. And according to Jung, the greatest discovery in psychology of the whole 20th century was what he called the reality of the psyche, that the psyche was ontologically the most real. And Jung was saying, I have quotes, he's saying, yeah, as the quantum physicists are discovering the quantum, they're actually tapping into what in psychology we call the reality of the psyche. You know, it's like one is the psychological articulation and one is the scientific articulation. And they're pointing at the same thing because they're pointing at that we, through our moment by moment awareness in this very moment, are actually co-creating our experience of ourselves and of the universe. And as more and more of us tap into that consciously, I mean, we can change the world. And that's not just New Age woo-woo stuff. That's what all of this is about.
Very true. Anything else, Graham?
Experience holiday cheer at Tanger Outlets with savings up to 70% off your favorite brands. From fragrances to accessories and the latest styles, discover the best gifts for everyone on your list. Save big at Nike Factory Store, Michael Kors, Under Armour, Coach, Polo Ralph Lauren, Kate Spade New York, and so many more. Unwrap the best at Tanger Outlets. Hundreds of brands, endless gifting options. Plan your trip at tanger.com.
How do you feel when you switch to Geico and save on your car insurance? It's like going to work on one Thursday morning and thinking to yourself, just one more day until Friday. But then somebody in the elevator says, Happy Friday! Then you check your phone quickly and discover today is actually Friday. So yes, Happy Friday, random stranger in the elevator. Happy Friday indeed. Yep, switching and saving with Geico feels just like that. Get more with Geico.
I was going to sit there and say the only other one is I was curious if some of the other thinkers that I found useful he might have explored, like C.S. Peirce with semiotics and abductive logic. And, you know, invariance is another one that I came from. And I'm trying to think of the author's name slips me at the moment.
No, but I'm not like, familiar with either of those.
Yeah, the interesting thing with Peirce, he's worth exploring. He was one of the co-creators of semiotics, and abductive logic is like a third type of logic beyond inductive and deductive. It basically has those two emerging from a more fundamental state of uncertainty, and it, you know, dovetails very nicely with quantum logic and quantum physics. Tag.
Interesting. Interesting. Yeah, so much to discover. Well, while you're on the subject of Jung, it's interesting, Paul, because I wrote a lot of notes, but what you just said, I actually wrote or actually copied. But, and please let me quote it. You write that in a letter to Jung, Wolfgang Pauli, his friend and probably the smartest person in the history of humanity, Pauli writes, "For me personally, the relationship between physics and psychology is that of the mirror image." Jung writes that, quote, "There are processes going on in psychology that are absolutely indispensable in physics. These processes that Jung is referring to are the human activities of observing, interpreting, thinking, which ultimately cannot be separated from the practice of physics." Hence, Jung writes, quote, "It is my conviction that the investigation of the psyche is the science of the future." So what you just said, I just quoted.
Yeah. No, absolutely. I mean, Jung was so far ahead of his time because the psyche is the matrix, the mother out of which, you know, art and science emerge.
Yeah, very true. And of course, Pauli and Jung work together with the idea of synchronicities. How would you say synchronicities work with quantum physics?
Yeah. Well, you know, the thing with Pauli, not only were they colleagues, Jung and Pauli, but Pauli was a patient of Jung's. So in one of his collected works, he has all these dreams of this like world-class scientist. And, you know, it came out that it was Pauli's dreams. And it's totally related because, you see, quantum physics in really showing us the dreamlike nature of reality, what that's doing is dissolving the boundary between matter and mind, right? Just like a dream, there's no distinction between the matter of the dream world we're in and the mind that's experiencing it. It's like one and the same thing, just expressed in different ways. And so quantum physics is actually showing us that, our conception that spirit and matter were total polar opposites, just like a wave and a particle. Right. You can't imagine more opposites than a wave and a particle. And yet light, you know, through the famous two-slit experiment, that's when that, you know, all of quantum physics is considered to be enfolded within that experiment, because they discovered that, oh my God, light will manifest either as a wave or a particle depending on how it's observed. And in the same way, this deeper quantum, whatever you call it, which is a higher dimensional energy, or I don't even know what words to put on it, it can manifest as either through the channel of mind or matter at the same moment or at different moments. And what that's pointing out is that mind and matter, ultimately speaking, even though subjectively from the relative point of view, we can experience them as separate, from the ultimate point of view, they're indistinguishably one. And when you begin to see that, that's when you begin to tap into the dreamlike nature. And, you know, I keep on mentioning the dreamlike nature, and it's so profound what I'm trying to point out. And I'm just a translator. I haven't discovered anything. No, I'm just translating this ancient wisdom into modern terms, because when you see the dreamlike nature, what you realize is that, oh my God, we are dreaming up this nightmare. That's why I call what he called the nightmare mind virus, because it creates nightmares, you know, when you're afflicted by it. But we're creating this nightmare, and encoded in this waking nightmare that we're all experiencing with Ukraine and Middle East and on and on and on, encoded hidden within it, it's like revealing to us everything we need to know in order to wake up. But if we don't recognize what it's revealing to us, if we don't recognize that this universe is an oracle that's continually speaking, and it's speaking symbolically, which is the language of dreams, if we don't recognize that, then just like in an individual, if they have a dream and they don't get the message, what happens? The dream reoccurs, and it gets more and more intense and more amplified until they finally get the message. And so in a way, that's when I'm talking about the dreamlike nature of reality. There is something that's being revealed to us, not just through quantum physics, but through what we're dreaming up in the world current day. And if we don't recognize what's being revealed, and, you know, what's being revealed is the dreamlike nature or who we are or our creative power, there are a lot of ways of articulating it. If we don't recognize it, then we're fated to just continue on the path of destroying ourselves. But if we recognize it, and maybe even if one person recognizes it. Or maybe in this moment, one of your listeners, you know, has the realization of the dreamlike nature or understands the quantum. Understanding isn't quite the right word because it's not something you can understand with your mind. But, you know, or sees their shadow or, you know, sees Watiko. There are a lot of different ways of saying it. Just any one of us having an expansion of consciousness could be the very thing that catalyzes a global awakening in the collective unconscious of humanity.
Yeah. It's the butterfly effect. Chaos theory also works with this. The universe has a pattern and you can disrupt it. And it's hard. I mean, I remember that part in Alice in Wonderland with the Red King, where the Red King is dreaming all of us, but Alice doesn't want to wake him up because she's afraid she'll pop out of existence. So we're all holding on to our little ego sometimes, Paul, like Alice.
Yeah. No, totally.
It's hard. And, so you would say synchronicity in a simple way. Again, I loved your passage on this. Is when people ask me what it is, it's simply God talking to you. It's always talking to you. And even somebody we want to talk about briefly in a little bit is Philip K. Dick and his famous quote, since the universe is made up of information, then it can be said that information will save us. So we have to see this code, this world that's talking to us at all times, which is really just us trying to wake us up.
Yeah. But that's like
that goes paradoxical.
That goes back to the idea of terma, of hidden treasure. Because say, for example, like, some, you know, community discovers a terma and then, here's this blessed prayer or practice or whatever. And the interesting thing about terma is that it can't, say the person who discovers it, they're not empowered to transmit it and share it until they have the realization of the terma. So if it's a practice, you know, then they have to do the practice and have the realization, and then they're embodying the realization in such a way that then they can share and transmit the terma. And this idea. So there was something you just said that made me think of the terma. What was the last thing you said, Miguel? Do you remember?
The universe is made of information. Information will save us. So we're...
Right. That's exactly it. Yeah. So the idea of these terma, they can be spontaneously discovered, but we can also intervene in the dreaming, in our life, in a way we can plant our own terma. An example, say if tomorrow I have to... there's something I need to bring. I need to bring a book when I leave tomorrow. So what do I do? Maybe I'll take my water bottle and I'll put it in right in front of the front door. So tomorrow when I leave, I'll see the water bottle and it'll remind me, I have to bring that book. Mm-hmm. And so then think about what I'm describing. Like, you know, the present moment, Paul, right in this moment, is planting a clue in the fabric of the waking dream for a future self, for the Paul tomorrow, to come across that clue, and it'll help the future Paul to remember something it needs to do. What I'm wondering about is if the higher self part of us, whatever you call it, the soul or the awake part, whether it's actually planting, it's already planted these clues in the fabric of the waking dream that are engineered to go off at exactly the right moment that we need in order to wake up. And even taking it a step further, even quantum, that's what I mean about quantum physics is potentially, you know, is a modern day analog to a terma, because it's now in the world. It's now in our minds, whether we are conscious of it or not. But if we take in this gnosis that quantum physics is openly revealing to us, it can help us to wake up. But what I'm actually pointing at is that we can creatively intervene in our life in a way to plant our own termas, our own hidden treasures that stimulate our lucidity in a way that helps us to wake up.
Yeah, beautifully said. So in a way, it's like it's a living information system like tarot or the I Ching. If you approach it as it's alive, it's interactive, and it's
right. Right. And that's why, like, you know, people who say, but the universe isn't giving me any answers. And I would say, are you asking questions? You know, it's a reciprocal relationship. And the universe is an epiphany, is a theophany, is a revelatory oracle continually. But if we don't recognize that, then what good is that? You see, that's where quantum physics is showing, is proven, this is a participatory universe. That's the phrase. So this revelation, it's not just a passive revelation. Oh, yeah, I understand it intellectually. No, it's a participatory revelation. We have to take in what quantum physics is revealing to us, just like in alchemy. It's not like you find the philosopher's stone and here it is. You hold it in your hands. No, you become a living philosopher's stone. That's the idea, you know? And so when you really plug in to what quantum physics as revelation is showing us, you actually embody that and creatively express yourself. Okay, here's a way of understanding that. You see, quantum physics is actually helping us potentially, because it's not deterministic, this universe, it's potential. That's one of the main things in quantum physics. It's like shedding light on who we are. Well, like, who are we? What does that even mean? That's such a cliche. And I point out in my book that, well, who are we? We are, by our very nature, creative. So when we have realization of our nature, then we embody being creative and we express ourselves creatively. And the more we do that, the deepen the realization of our nature in a positive feedback loop that creates light upon light. And that's available to us. And then what happens when you hang out with other people who are also turned on and psychoactivated and quantum physicized or whatever you call it, it becomes contagious. And that realization can go viral in a positive way.
Yeah, beautifully said again. And I think the other thing about your book, and I think it's a very important theme of your book, and we're talking about how Wetiko fooled us into thinking we live in a material universe. There's no consciousness. It's all cause and effect, linear time, yada, yada, yada. We start getting into this. But of course, there's the other shadow, which is, of course, solipsism and spiritual bypassing, which affects the other Wetiko's younger brother, maybe. There's a danger in that. But as you write, the answer is simple, right? Everything is interconnected. It's not you. They may just be us, but everything is interconnected and affects each other. And of course, you write this, the beautiful Buddhist or the Buddhist allegory of Indra's net.
Yeah. And the idea of everything being interconnected, you know, it's that sense of like quantum physics has discovered that this is a quantum universe through and through on every scale, not just on the micro scale of the really small, but on the macro scale too, and everywhere in between. And by saying this is a quantum universe we live in, what that means is that there's no separate things interacting. Mm-hmm. It's one seamlessly interconnected whole. And so, you know, if I think of myself as existing as a separate self, as an ego, which is the essence of the mind virus, you know, then all of a sudden I think, like I was saying, that, oh, you're separate, there's others out there, and as soon as there's others, there's fear, and that just feeds the mind virus. But, you know, if I actually see, oh, I don't exist as an isolated atom, you know, like to use that term, separate, you know, from the rest of the universe. And then I think about, wait, but other people don't either. There's no like essential, independently, intrinsically existing self in them either. They only exist in relationship to the rest of the universe. There's no separate self. There's no separate things to be found anywhere. That everything in Buddhism, there's a term interdependent co-origination or dependent co-arising is another way of saying it. And this was the realization that the Buddha won by his inquiry. You know, that's what, and whenever he was asked, well, what gives you the authority to give these teachings or to say what you're saying or to claim to be awake? Because the Buddha just means he was awakened in the dream. He always would cite dependent co-arising. That's what gives me the authority. And that's what quantum physics is a scientific expression of.
No, it makes sense. And of course, compassion is very important without
a doubt. Well, compassion is the major thing, because when we have the realization, when we see through the imagination of the separate self and we recognize we're interdependent, interconnected, we depend on each other for our own survival, you know, there's no separate self to be found anywhere. The energetic expression of that realization is compassion, you know? And so when people ask me, oh, how can I more deepen my awakening? you know, and I think about in Tibetan Buddhism, they say if it's genuine awakening, it's always the co-joining of two factors of what's called emptiness and compassion. And emptiness, that's lucidity. That's to realize, oh, there's nothing intrinsically, objectively existing separate from awareness. That's to recognize the nature of our situation of being in a dream. And that's the emptiness, that's the lucidity. But the other aspect is the compassion, because out of that realization, the energetic expression of that realization is compassion.
Yeah, and we're back at Jung with the paradox of the union of the opposites and the conjunction of the alchemists. It's, again, our minds are not built to understand it, but that's what we do. We don't reject evil or witiko, we integrate it into ourselves.
Yeah, well, it's the idea of, like, you know, I think of Jung, and it's helped me so much over my life to, you know, he really taught me to hold the creative tension of the opposites. Because so many people, it's just so painful by its nature of the experience, is that we identify with one of the opposites and we reject the other. And, you know, he points out, yeah, that creates dis-ease, you know, that creates illness. But if you're able to hold, and any artist, any creative person knows this, if you hold that creative tension, you know, with integrity and with awareness, Jung then says, yet out of that comes what he calls the transcendent function. He also calls it the reconciling symbol. Remember, symbol is the language of dreams. You know, a way to think about that is, out of holding that tension of the opposites with real integrity comes grace. And think about what happened with Christ. Christ, Jung taught me, on the cross was a symbol of holding that tension of the opposites. And what came out of that was the resurrected body. That's symbolizing this inner process that all of us are fated to go through.
Very much so. And yeah, we should bring up Philip K. Dick, who also appears in your book, among another a whole cast of very great luminaries. But of course, Philip K. Dick is one of the saints of the show. And as we talked, he and Elvis had very parallel lives from the beginning. But tell us about Philip K. Dick. I think in one part, I'm quoting you, you say that Philip K. Dick had an assertion that, quote, physics is a magic window. So like Jung, he was kind of ahead of the game, right?
Oh, totally. No, and Philip K. Dick, you know, and in my previous book, the third book on Watiko, on Dreaming Watiko, the second book, just called Watiko, there's a big chapter on Philip K. Dick, because he was really switched on to the mind virus. He actually said, he goes, yeah, this like mimicking stuff, because Watiko is a mime. In the apocryphal text, they call it a counterfeiting spirit. It impersonates us. Right. And then if we're not awake, we identify with the counterfeit version, the false version of ourselves. That's a way of understanding the Watiko mind virus. And Philip K. Dick was super switched on to that. He goes, this mimicking stuff is the key to everything. Okay. So he was really switched on to the mind virus, to the dreamlike nature, and to the, you know, the whole, if we still have taken online in our minds the whole sort of linear time and causality thing, you know, there's a quote I think I have of Dick in the book where he talks about that causality, you know, that you see through the causal dimension of reality into the acausal, or what I call the simulcausal, you know, in Undreaming Watiko. And that's the logic of dreaming, you know, and that's the four-valued logic compared to the Aristotelian two-valued logic. That's the logic of quantum physics. That's the logic of dreaming. That's the logic of Buddhism, that it requires a higher faculty of mind, you know, the four-valued logic, or, you know, just connecting with the universe as living oracle that's continually speaking to us symbolically, to begin to see this mind virus, because the mind virus only has power over us to the extent we're blind to it, because it itself is a form of blindness. And but when we see, you know, the Watiko mind virus, which quantum physics is actually the medicine for, or when we see the quantum nature of reality, when we see the dreamlike nature of reality, all of these are just different ways of saying that, you know, it's totally within our capacity at this very moment to just open our eyes and look and see what's in front of us. It's not hidden. It's hiding in its obviousness. And when we see that, something in us unlocks. And then what comes through is the creative spirit, which is our nature. Our nature, by its nature, like I've been saying, is creative.
Definitely agreed. Well, we got about 5 minutes. I want to get to one super chat. Hope everybody looks like they're enjoying themselves in the chat. Good to see everybody. And again, hope you guys in the chat had a good Thanksgiving and you're having a good holidays. But this is from Benjamin Ochoa, ¿cómo estás? And his question, I don't know if you've covered it, but let me know, Paul. Let me whip it out here. Can you talk more about the subjectivity aspect of quantum physics? Is there a theory?
The subjectivity aspect, I don't, what is that? What does he mean? I don't quite know. Is there a theory?
I guess it could mean, yeah, the observer changes thing. Consciousness is subjective. I mean, yeah.
I guess one thing I can say about this, there's an acronym that I created in my third Watiko book. I have a bunch of acronyms, just these names for processes that we all know, but we don't have language for. And one of them is, it's called EUQUG, EUQUG, I think EUQUG. And what it stands for is erroneous use of quantum gnosis. So when people hear about quantum physics, oh, things are both true and not true. Oh, everything's subjective. So therefore, there's an equivalency to how I'm seeing things and how you're seeing things. Oh, no, we're just seeing things through our objects, through our subjective lens. They're all equivalent. That's completely wrong. You know, it's not saying that at all, you know. And, you know, because one person could actually be seeing what's actually happening and another person could be seeing their projection and not seeing what's happening at all. So to make an equivalence based on quantum physics as like, oh, quantum physics is everything is true and not true. I know people who use this justification to not study what's happening in the world, you know, to not be up to speed with what's happening in the body politic, because they will invoke quantum physics saying, oh, well, you know, things are both true and not true. So what's the point? And I just hit my head. I don't even know what to say to that, you know. And and the thing to understand, quantum physics is not just saying that everything's subjective. Quantum physics is the realm that's coupling the subject and the object. Okay. Brilliant. It's this bardo. It's an intermediate realm that's the most fundamentally real. This is the reality of the psyche that Jung was pointing at. You know, it's the realm of when shamans have visions, when we have dreams. Can you differentiate between the matter of that vision and the dream from the psyche that's experiencing it? No, it's one quantum system. You know, that's what I'm talking about.
No, it makes perfect sense for sure. Well, as we get to the end, Graham, do you have any final question or comment for Paul?
Yeah, I was going to say, it sounds like what Paul's saying is very similar to those people who talk about, you know, the quantum reality as intelligent infinity. And it's the idea that we're querying that one. And a lot of times when they say that they don't get an answer, it's more that they don't get the answer that they want.
Yeah, totally. And if I could just say one more thing, because I've been thinking about it, I want to make sure to get this across. And that is, you know, so quantum physics inspires incredible hope, you know, in a good way, in the sense that, so here these physicists were trying to understand, you know, the building blocks of reality. And they came, you know, like I said, they didn't find matter, they found consciousness. And they called it a number of names. One name would be elementary particles, you know, that exist in a state of potentiality of any and every state they could ever potentially exist in up until the moment of observation. And then one of the potentialities actualizes, all the other potentialities vaporize back into parallel worlds. And the very next moment, the same thing, every and any possibility by our act of observing or perceiving, the wave function collapses into particular manifestation. That process is happening each and every moment. What that means is profound, because what that means is, even if one of those possibilities is highly, ridiculously improbable, and that's a quote from a physicist, it still could manifest this very moment. Okay. What that means is that the quantum possibility of our species actually awakening, that enough of us awakening you know, could actually change the collective consciousness of our species so that we could, like, instead of compulsively, you know, just creating these myriad catastrophes that are going to destroy our species, we can actually awaken in time and avert that and actually channel our energy, not in creating all these resources of weapons of mass destruction, but into something positive that feeds us and invests in culture and love and compassion. That's actually a real possibility according to quantum physics. That's not New Age woo. That's hardcore science. And to really understand that, that's one of the things I'm trying to get across in my work, that can really inspire us, you know, to really embody that realization and, you know, hopefully to turn other people onto it.
Well said again, as always. So awesome. Well, we are towards the end. Again, thank you, Benjamin, for the support. For those of you, please support Aeon by any way you can. For those that you will be listening in audio, if you're a Patreon, AB Prime, or Red Circle subscriber, you'll get the podcast summary. Very cool thing that I found out with Google Notebook LM, where I feed it all the information, I play with it, and then it gives me this sort of really cool audio summary so people can understand the podcast. And people have been enjoying it. And for also tomorrow, we will have a show on Carl Jung and addiction. So expect that wonderful place where AA and Carl Jung meet. Some of you might need it for the holidays. I need that sobriety every day. So check it out tomorrow. And Paul, where do you want to send people? Awakening the Dream is your website, right?
I tell people if they want to awaken in the dream, go to awakeninthedream.com. That's my website. Ton of articles, all for free, ton of interviews just like this. You know, it's not monetized. You know, that's the criticism I get, but this is medicine. I want to just get it out to people. And yeah, people can buy my books or book a session, but, you know, basically, like, you know, all the rest of the info is there, you know, just for people to check out. So yeah, that's where people can go.
Awesome. Yeah, check it out for sure. Yeah, and get his book. I'm going to read it again. You say you're working. What are you working on next? Can you divulge
it? Yeah. So, yeah, no, it's the book about the idea of the reality of the psyche that, according to Jung, was the greatest discovery of the whole 20th century in psychology. And it's the psychological correlate to the quantum. And the thing about the reality of the psyche, like, you know, hardly anybody even knows what it means. I've read every Jungian book in the world a million times, and none of them really talk about it. And almost everybody, no one's even gotten the memo that, there's been this incredible discovery that changes the course of history. And, you know, it's the greatest discovery in all of psychology of the 20th century. And I tell that to people and nobody even knows what I'm talking about. So that's what I'm writing. And it really complements my work on the Wetiko mind virus, on the quantum, on the dreaming, and then there's the reality of the psyche. I feel like that completes my body of work.
Until the spirit calls you for the next one, right? Like, you have a choice. Like, we have a choice. Totally. With these things. Well, awesome. Well, we at the end. Thank you very much for those who showed up. God, I need some coffee. Graham, thank you very much for keeping us company.
Oh, it was my pleasure to do some quantum batting around with Paul.
Yes.
Thank you for the opportunity.
Yes, Paul. Always enjoyed when you come on the show. And thank you very much for the book. And we look forward to the next time we can chat.
Yeah. No, I just really appreciate the invite, Adam. And I'm just so excited for your Elvis book.
Yes. I can't wait to hear your, I can't wait to see you. What your advice and feedback is. I think you'll enjoy it.
Yeah. No, I'm sure I will.
All right, everybody. Well, thank you. And again, meet us tomorrow for some Jung and alcoholism. It's a very positive show. And until then, yeah, enjoy the rest of your Mars day. And we will talk soon. Write your own gospel. Live your own myth, as I say. Take care, everybody. Thank you.
Need parts now? O'ReillyAuto.com offers in-store pickup, same-day home delivery, or next-day home shipping. Get more parts your way at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
O'Reilly. Auto Parts.
Experience holiday cheer at Tanger Outlets with savings up to 70% off your favorite brands. From fragrances to accessories and the latest styles. Discover the best gifts for everyone on your list. Save big at Nike Factory Store. Michael Kors, Under Armour, Coach, Polo Ralph Lauren, Kate Spade New York, and so many more. Unwrap the best at Tanger Outlets. Hundreds of brands, endless gifting options. Plan your trip at Tanger.com.